Sam, you well?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. Just finished another award-winning show, and that was it.
On the award-winning already.
That's good. Yeah, well, telling facts.
Love
right.
it. Right, I'm going to ask you. I'm not going to ask you any boring questions. Right?
Good.
I'm going to ask you questions about you. I'm curious. Same. Ask every guest. Right. What was Tam like at high school?
I was neither a SWAT. Got my kind of old grades and my hires and that. And I wasn't a daft either, but I was school captain, so that meant I was in charge of the tuck shop, which was the dream job for MD at school age. You'd go to the big cash and carry,
right?
A wee short taxi ride for Braithurst High School in Motherwell, and it was great. And I would determine, oh the power, I would determine what flavour of crisps the rest of the school got. I'd determine what sweeties they got, and all the big top hatters at the time, like Skull Crushers, which were probably 2p, any big white chocolate with the creamy filling, sweeties, gold bullion bars, wee toffee bars, and kind of gold foil. And I'd say, right, we're going to have them this week, we're going to have that. I was like Michael Jackson gone shopping in that documentary. I'll have 3 of those, 5 of those, 2 of those. So the power that gave you. And what it also did, because you were in charge of the tuck shop in sixth year, you had the keys
right
to the tuck shop, right? So I don't mean like going in for the Billy Bunner stuff and eating all the crisps and all that, you know, but it was like a wee gang hut,
right?
As much as we had the what was it called then, the 6 year common room,
mm-hmm.
You had that and a wee pool table in it and a wee portable telly, and but you had the key for the tuck shop, and we'd get in there, and that's where we'd get the wee tape recorder in and listen to things like Derek and Clive. If you're familiar with him, Peter Cook and Dudley Moore,
no.
Look them up, right? Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, two comedy greats. Late on in their careers, they did these characters, Derek and Clive, and they were just talking shite to each other, mm-hmm. But it was beyond X-rated, right? But it was very, very funny. And these, in that era, 86, 87, these tapes were all doing the round,
right?
A bit like, in the same time, Only an Excuse mm-hmm. had just started. And that was the audio tapes,
right?
Yeah, that originally, mm-hmm. And they all did the rounds as well. So that was another great thing about the tuck shop. So yeah, spent a lot of my time in the tuck shop at Braithurst High School, which obviously was I can't kid you on, it was a pretty rough school.
Mm-hmm.
Our school magazine had an obituary column. that's true. It was one of their places, but no, it was great, and I'm proud to say that amongst others, folk that came out of Braithurst High, you had Elaine C. Smith,
right,
was a pupil there. You had Gary McAllister, you had Ian Ferguson, who scored Motherwell's opener, mm-hmm. in the 91 Cup final, man of many clubs. You had James Weir, or Jim Weir,
right,
as football calls him, who Hamilton Accies legend, St Johnstone legend. He was at Hearts, and he's now running a boozer, funnily enough, called the King James up in Perth. I was up there the other week. So there was a few that came through the ranks at Braithurst, you know. I warm memories of being at my school, and I love it. Some folks say, oh, I'd hate that, or I'd be embarrassed at that. I've been asked back quite a few times,
mm-hmm.
prize giving or a wee chat to some of the pupils. I love doing that.
Aye.
And it's only, I don't know if you've done it, but if you go back to your old school, it suddenly seems tiny.
Aye.
Whereas when you were a kid, school was a big giant place, you know. Aye. But no like that at all.
What did you see when you were getting to the end of high school, what did you fancy then job wise? What was in the or did you have a plan, or were you just
tuck shop management and just kind of getting from one school to another? Yeah, I think these would sell better. And don't buy scampi fries, nobody likes them, get bacon fries. I could have done all that stuff, you know. But my best subject by a country mile at school was English,
right?
And even to this day I tend to be a terrible pedant when it comes to all things grammar, mm-hmm. but I was fairly good at English. I loved the written word, and when I was still at school, I was writing some wee kind of jokes and sketches and stuff, and submitting them to some radio shows, just as like a wee hobby. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of like sketch shows, topical shows on Radio 2 and Radio 4, used some of the stuff. So this was a big deal, because I was still at school and all that, and like the Motherwell Times made a big deal, you know, and the school made a big deal, you know. But it was the kind of thing that I enjoyed. So I then got a wee hook in with BBC Scotland,
mm-hmm.
an old mentor of mine then, Philip Differ, who created Only an Excuse and wrote a hell of a lot of it for his wee pal Jonathan Watson and Tony Roper, because I was mad about the football. It was great. I managed to be able to write some lines here and there for that. I then went to Napier College, mm-hmm. when it was still a college, when I left the school, but I was too keen and too excited about doing the writing for all these shows. I took my eye off the ball with the college, and about 3 or 4 months in, I think in football parlance, they'd say that we mutually agreed to split. They never saw hide nor hair of me. And then when I explained to them why, they rarely saw hide nor hair of me, they said, well, you know, maybe that's something you should have a go at then, you know, and no kid yourself on with this. So I did, and I battered away, and then thanks to that, getting a few bits and pieces on the radio and on the telly and stuff, with sketch shows, of which there were plenty back in the day, Naked Video, Scotch and Rye, and then you had loads of things down south, mm-hmm. Hale and Pace, Bobby Davro, Les Dennis, Little and Large, all these names from way back when. A variety of things like that, and being keen again on the written word, I managed to get a foot in the door with the Evening Times in Glasgow, now the Glasgow Times, mm-hmm. and they gave me a wee strip column on a Monday, called Fan Zone. Now, that was good timing, because fanzines, mm-hmm. were all their age at the time. This is a pre-internet age, remember, right? And every club had their paper,
that's right.
Fanzine, you know. So it was good to tap into that, because mine was very much a wee tongue-in-cheek, humorous column about the week's football. And the reason it worked, and what was probably a big thing in helping me career-wise, always wrote it for the perspective of a Motherwell fan, mm-hmm. and this was in ostensibly a Glasgow paper,
yeah.
where the vast majority of people reading it either supported Rangers or Celtic, mm-hmm. or maybe a smarter than a Partick Thistle, mm-hmm. or Clyde fans or whatever, Queen's Park, right? But it was largely Rangers and Celtic. So because I had little time for either of them, and I could freely take the piss out of both of them, then it worked a treat, because I was never ever seen to be siding with one of them. That wouldn't have lasted a minute, you know what I mean? As a result of that, that helped get me noticed. And then after 3 years of being with Evening Times, and I was still doing all the other wee kind of writing gigs here and there, far from lucrative, right? Mm-hmm. And indeed, with my wee strip column at times when I started there, it was washers, you know. But then through to 94, I get a call for the BBC. They were going to start a programme called Off the Ball. They wanted it to be a wee bit irreverent and a wee bit more fan-based and all that, mm-hmm. than the kind of maybe straight-laced, kind of starchy, mm-hmm. football coverage it had been on BBC Radio Scotland at the time. So the wee producer, Alan DePaulette, always warmly thank him for giving me a wee start there. He drafted in myself, Greg Hemphill and Sanjeev Kohli.
Right.
Where are they now?
Not heard of them.
I'm doing a fucking podcast in my free time. They're away gallivanting in Monaco or something when they're still game riches. But no, Greg and Sanjeev came in. Greg was a host there. He'd done wee bits and bobs with Radio Scotland. So mm-hmm. they brought him in to host a show, Off the Ball. Me and Sanjeev were at the other end of the table. And we did a year of that, and it undoubtedly made an impact, because we were a lot away with murder and all the rest of it, and there hadn't been any like it on Radio Scotland before, and we were unquestionably mm-hmm. taking our lead for the irreverence of like Only an Excuse, you know. And but we did that for 1 year, and then after the year, as much as the show had made a wee bit of a name for itself, and it was only half an hour, I think half 5 to 6, mm-hmm. after all the football, half an hour, that's all we had. And after a year, they thought, right, there's definitely something there. But Greg, by his own admission, wasn't a diehard football fan, mm-hmm. right? Sanjeev, ditto, right? I was the only one who had an issue getting into the old Queen Margaret Drive studios for 5:30, because I'd be out at the Motherwell game, and I'd try to get back in time and all the rest of it, you know. So I was kind of the diehard fan. So they drafted in Stuart for the new season.
Mm-hmm.
Stuart had been doing a wee bit of late night stuff involving a kind of phone-in element on Radio 5 Live.
Right. Did you know each other before it?
No.
No.
They brought in Stuart for August 1995, it would have been. And only because I had been part of the show the previous year, because they had this idea it was going to be like Zoo Radio, an expression that I hate,
mm-hmm.
and they were going to revolve the guests on it, you know, and right. maybe photo that we'd go back to. Oh, mm-hmm. thanks, that was great. We'll get you back in mm-hmm. 3 weeks, you know. So only because I'd been part and parcel of the show in the first year, it started off with me and Stuart.
Right.
And thankfully we had to off, and to end up that Stuart, God bless him, he said to the producer after our first show, he says, you know what, I think me and Tam had a wee bit of chemistry there, mm-hmm. or whatever, you know. And I get brought in the next week, and then the next week, and then that was us, you know. And in terms of me and Stuart, we knew of each other.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for that being, Stuart at this point was already popping up in late night arty farty shows,
right.
maybe with shades on indoors and right. all that, talking about the recent art exhibition that had opened in Glasgow.
You know, edgy
and
that.
Aye. And I, only because of Stuart flying up and down to London and mm-hmm. stuff like that, he used to see the Evening Times on a Monday.
Right.
And he would read my column, and then when I met him, he says, oh, I loved reading your column, and it was a change for all the usual shite and mm-hmm. all that, and you're having a go at Rangers and Celtic. So that was as much as we knew of each other. But when we analysed it, and it was some years later about why it seemed to work, we actually had very, very similar backgrounds. We both, you know, no sob stories, but mm-hmm. we'd both really, really quite stark upbringings, mm-hmm. where neither of our parents had a penny.
Right.
You know, Stuart in a housing scheme in Perth, me in a housing scheme in Motherwell. And we didn't have much, but our parents gave us everything that they could. And we both, you know, supported a wee Diddy team, mm-hmm. which I think was crucial. A wee bit like me saying, writing a column as a Motherwell fan and having a go at Celtic and Rangers, the balance was good. Mm-hmm. I think that's why we're here 30 years later, when it was me and Stuart as Motherwell St Johnstone fans, able to have a go at not just Celtic Rangers, but the rest of Scottish football and beyond. But I think that's how the dynamic, the chemistry, whatever you want to call it, was just about right.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we didn't. We literally, it's weird when I think back, folk can never believe it, but we met, hiya, I'm Tam. Oh, hello, I'm Stuart. We met on the morning of that first show, which went on air at 12:30, I think it was back then, and we met at maybe 9:30 in the morning in the BBC, and then we were on air
aye.
3 hours later, and we've been here ever since. So really, really strange.
Aye, that's bizarre. But see, for having a show that lasts, and you know yourself, there's shows that kind of, more so in a football world, that come and disappear after a year aye. Or two. Why do you think it's been so successful for such a long period?
I think we're able to, as much as folk would say, oh, I've been listening to that, your detractors, your critics, mm-hmm. folk on websites and on social media, anonymous aye. Names, none of that, you know, and who, you know, maybe during the week massage their granny's feet, as I always say, in return for getting a top up on their phone to try and keep them
no picture
thinking
profile
they're
in.
Relevant, you know. For the guys like that, guys who say, oh, I've never listened to that for years, but you know they listen
aye.
Every week. Because some of the stuff they pick you up when you think, I thought you didn't listen to this. Oh, aye, my pal, tell me, you know. But anyway, as much as guys like that would say, oh, same old shit, I've been listening to it 30 years and they never ever change it. No, the whole show's always evolved. We might keep the same frame of the show, i.e. it's me and Stuart, a Motherwell St Johnstone fan presenting it. We have one or two guests in. We will look through the week's events. We will do a team of the week. We will have a song to play us out, whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just the template,
mm-hmm.
or as Stuart would say, that is the canvas on which we draw, right? But that's the template. But everything always changes, because if I look back at what we were talking, now I've only just finished doing the programme today, and we started off with launching into Brendan Rodgers and talking about how Celtic are victimised by the referee. Celtic, who have won 11 out of 12 titles, who last year's treble winners, a quadruple treble before that, one penalty awarded against them this year, one red card flashed at a player, victimised, right? Now, that has not been a story that has ever come up. Brendan Rodgers claiming Celtic are victimised. So that immediately makes today's show fresh, because
yeah.
you're immediately having it. And the great thing about Scottish football, even when we do shows, the first time we would have done shows over a summer period, because we're effectively on the whole year and we take our holidays kind of independently mm-hmm. and that. But first time we'd have been on over a summer period, when it was one of the summers, no European Championships, no World Cup, mm-hmm. and that. And you're like, oh, what are we going to talk about? But as you know yourself, Scottish football does not right. stop.
It's always something.
There's always a story. So, the material within the show, the content within the show, thankfully, Scottish football is so vibrant and so farcical at times that we're never ever short of talking about stuff. So, the format of the show has changed very, very little down through years. Probably the biggest change, and that's not to do with us, that's mainly to do with modern technology. We did always take phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, for the first 10 years of the show, maybe, the pre-football show, the lunchtime show, would have been us, chat, stuff like that, laugh with the guests, and then we would come on after the football, and that would be your classic phone-in show, right? But ever since the advent, you know, I'm going back to from, 98 onwards, when it's meant to be seen as the internet
mm-hmm.
era, texts and emails were a much, I think, sharper way of letting the audience have their say, because no harm to them, but, and you can still hear it now in phone-in shows, you'll get guys that would have come on, what, is that me, Moan? And it's like dead air. Stuart, is that you? No, it's Tam, it's that. And it just, some of it sounded awful. So we were never so happy when we didn't dictate this, but
mm-hmm.
when you gradually realised, 98 maybe onwards, that more and more folk are now emailing or texting the show than they would have wanted to phone.
Aye.
And it was easier for folk as well. Maybe a guy sitting in the passenger seat coming back for a game.
I just fire a message.
And or a guy going to the game now. In fact, we do the Saturday lunchtime and the Sunday lunchtime. I know for a fact that we even had, when we first came on air today at 12, Aberdeen Kelly was kicking off at 12:15
mm-hmm.
and we'd quite a few Aberdeen and Kelly fans by that point had already contacted the show. They're maybe just getting out their car
mm-hmm.
at Pittodrie to get into the game, and they've bashed us mm-hmm. in a wee line, so that's great, and it's very, very manageable. It becomes almost part of my skill set, if you like, because your brain now, I've learned how to speed read, for example. Mm-hmm. I'll always get the right wedge of the texts and emails coming in that mm-hmm. have been printed off. And then our runner on the show today, it was young Laura, she'll come in, hand me a wedge of these, and you've not got time to methodically look through every single one, because thankfully we get loads, but you quickly learn to look for keywords that leap off a page, or even, dare I say it, names of listeners,
mm-hmm.
even pseudonyms that you become familiar with, and you know that they are responsible by and large for good material.
Yep.
So if I see their name, I think, oh, this will be good.
Aye.
And you put it at the top of the pile, right? But texts and emails, they're just so much more manageable. Mm-hmm. And I think it makes for a cleaner, quicker show.
Aye.
Because the best thing that any guest in our show will say, and trust me, this is a feather in their cap, particularly folk that have done other radio shows, maybe even their own radio shows,
mm-hmm.
the show may be finished and they'll say, is that it? That was awfully fast. And that's 2 hours a show we're doing. And that's, I think, because I want it to be like that.
Aye.
And and if anybody, the bit of criticism I'll get that I never bother my arse with, because I think it's positive criticism. If folks say, oh, Tam and Stuart, I'm fucking talking over guests and all that, mm-hmm. or butting in or that, that's fine, because if you're in a pub having a conversation about the fact, but that's all the ways, always the way for the outset, I've hopefully tried to make it sound. You don't sit back and just let the other gentleman having his pint to finish his point.
Aye.
You jump in,
aye.
Say, oh, you're talking shite, and you talk over each other.
But it turns into a rammy, doesn't it?
Exactly. So I make no bones about that. I have no qualms about, butting in and guess or jumping in to disagree mm-hmm. with them, or doesn't matter if they're full flow, because it wouldn't be natural otherwise.
Aye.
A wee bit like when I can't believe how they still say that, but folk would say, do you read a script, Tam? I thought, how would that work? Now, all we've got, I have never had in my fingertips in 30 years what you would call a script. Stuart has always had what you would call a script, but all that is timelines for when he's to go to the news.
Yep.
And then he fills in all the gaps, or when he's to go to, or we're going to play in a sting about sports sound, or we're going to play in a wee bit about Doctor Who. You know, you get these mad things that you've got to play in within a BBC show. And that's what he's got. It's not a, nobody would be reading it. This week, Brendan Rodgers said that he thinks Celtic are victimised. It would just sound awful. So we don't have a script. And we also, for MD, it says, it's normally Stuart gets us. Where's Tam the night, Stuart? If he's out minding his own business and he gets into a taxi, oh, where's Tam the night? We are not fucking joined at the hip. We have very much our own life since day one. We've had our own things today in life. And another reason that you're saying why is the show lasted, the analogy I always offer for that is that we all know people, married couples, who don't spend their entire life in each other's pockets. Might be a married couple and one of them, maybe two of them, work away from home and they get back together and it's all fresh and bubbly and nice and nice. So we built that with me and Stuart, because Stuart, whether it's been Channel 4 or whether it's been when he's doing his books and locking himself in a room to write his books and all that, we don't, us socialising through the week, honestly, it is rare, and I mean rare, looking at a 30-year period, will very, very, very sparingly hook up for a curry or something, you know, that very sparingly. But I think that might have part today with the success of the programme, because when we do come in, we'll both come in here Saturday morning, let's say 9:30, and the first half hour, the first cup of coffee, that's mainly a wee catch up about what's been happening that week, St Johnston, Motherwell, what we've been up to personally. The day I came in, a mutual pal, it was his 60th birthday yesterday, I was doing the air races a day out, I'm keeping Stuart up to speed with that. You know, we're talking about any idle gossip that we've heard in here through the week, you know what I mean? So we have a right good catch up, and only then would we then say, right, and I've always got my sheets, I'm quite meticulous with that, quite OCD, but because I've always worked with newspapers, I've got quite a breakdown of all the stories of the week, shorthand version. So then once we're ready to go, I'll say to Stuart, and our producer, I'll say, right, and I'll work my way back for the Saturday, back through the week, all the stuff that's happened, and then we'll pick four things for that week. We'll pick something, a theme for the team of the week, and we'll pick somebody that's been in the news for the music world, for that person or group, one of their songs to play us out at the end of the show, and that's it. And then we go on air, and other than scribbling down a few notes on each of the topics that we're going to talk about, then, you know, and that, you know, that, like for today, you know, there's the notes I've made today with Keith Lasley and the musician Dean Owens on. For the week in football, we had Celtic claiming to be victimised. We were talking about mixed loyalties today. Keith, Motherwell legend, going to St Mirren as chief exec. So a couple of lines there about that. Rock, pop and your club, Dean Owens. Dean Owens, Hearts fan, Phil Leith, knew about it, Rangers fan. So we're saying, right, who's all the other great music artists that you would associate with your club? You know, and then a wee hang, Billy Connolly saying that he wants to be buried up in Inversnaid and Loch Lomond. So an easy one for us is, where would your final resting be? Resting place be? Have you had a relative that got their ashes scattered on the park and anything like that? You know, and that's it. And then I've always got a wee sidebar. Not we're ever going to run out of stuff, but other stuff that's maybe happened this week. The spat with Douglas Ross in Holyrood. We had, sadly this week, a great young lad in here that passed away. I'm sure you'll have seen, that, Nick Sheridan. Took a note of that, made sure we paid our own wee tribute. Then you had silly stories like Rupert Murdoch at 92, getting engaged to be married for the sixth time. You know, there's all this stuff there. Neil Warnock under pressure. You know, there's loads of stuff. So it just means that you can always refer to that. But that, for him, that says a script, that's kind of it, you know, and that's that. And I would like to think as well, and indeed we've done it, there was one day that, I can't remember the reason for it, it was a few years ago now, and something crashed techie wise on sports sound, something major. Like the whole studio wasn't working or that. And we were on air and we get the call through about 2:55. We're finishing at 2:00. Can you stay on air to 3:00? Right? They were panicking. They thought, as long as we can get everything fixed for the football starting at 3:00. And right away we didn't, it wasn't like, oh, should I? No bother. And away we went, and that was that. And then because it's not like you even stick rigidly to the four things that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. There's always other things come out of maybe something that the guest says, or something that comes out of one of the topics that takes us down another wee road. So we just kind of would have elongated and taken advantage of stuff like that. So, you know, the bottom line is, with 30 years experience, if you sat us in front of a microphone, we'll do you a show. Aye. You know what I mean?
Aye.
It's not any hassle, you know? And I mean, because I get that, it's experience, because when I go out and I do gigs myself, like of which I've got a thing on tonight, if I go out, I sometimes need a hook to get me off stage when I'm up doing my one-man thing. And that's only because I've got all that in my head. And I've got so many stories and jokes and anecdotes and all the rest of it. And thankfully, it'll happen eventually. But because I've still got my marbles and because my brain still operates, then that's easy peasy. So, the shows, I think, folk like, in terms of folk, I would say, the shows, they must sound the same now as they did 30 years ago. Not entirely correct, right? But there's a certain comfort to be had. Now, when I think of radio shows, for example, that I like tuning into, a lot of them haven't really changed much through the years. But I'll tune into them, and there's that comfort there. And that's unquestionably the way that a lot of listeners feel about us. And that came to the fore quite dramatically, quite emotively, if you like, during lockdown. Because me and Stuart, thankfully, so many people, hard time it. They weren't able to work. A lot of folk who, for whatever reason, couldn't get furlough money, didn't have any money. There was all sorts of stuff going on. We were very, very lucky. We were still able to come in here and do the shows. We didn't have any guests in the studio. Aye. That was banned. But me and Stuart could easily keep our 2 metre distance, as were the rules. And we were able to go in with the shows, and we'd never had praise like it. When we were doing them, was folks saying, oh, you know, you don't know what day one day is for another. Now, all the days meld in together. But then when I hear the music coming on for Off the Ball, I know it's 12 o'clock.
It's a routine
Saturday,
for people, isn't it?
And it was. It's been a routine, and that's at a time as well when there was very little else in some people's lives, and it was great. And then we had the wee bonus where, and of course he particularly now had his critics as well, when we had Professor Jason Leach on for a wee weekly surgery. Every week, he was amazing. He was great, concise, clarity, to the point with every question that he was asked, helping folk in terms of the guy who wanted to come back from Germany because his old mom in Edinburgh had died, and can I get on a plane? What plane can I get on when I come back? How many can we have at the funeral? Da da da. And we, Professor Leach, was brilliant. He just told them concisely. He also, and he took no pleasure in it, I think at least 3 weddings he effectively cancelled on air. There was folk asking for advice. Jason, how's this all panning out? My daughter's due to get married in 8 weeks. We've got the place booked and all that. If we cancel it even up to next week, we still get our money back. You know, I would cancel it, he would say. He did that, I think, about 3 times, and he was true to his word. He says, if you go ahead, you're going to have 20 guests here rather than 140.
Aye, but you
even,
really want,
you know. I says, I'm sure that's maybe not your daughter's wanting, the memories when you look back on the photos and that, you know. Same thing, of course, was happening with folk with funerals and all the rest of it. They had to think long and hard, right, who's the 20 folk that get the invite, you know. So he was absolutely brilliant, and I've backed that wee guy fervently ever since, because a couple of reasons. You get folk who said, SNP lick spittle and all that. I always say to folk, it didn't matter if it was the Tories, Labour, the Lib Dems that were in power in Scotland, or even wee Lord Such of the Monster Raving Loony Party, if you remember him, it would still have been Jason Leach that go at the gig. It wasn't a political booking, right? And then folk would say, he's a dentist.
Aye, what does he know about COVID?
And I said, no, he was a dentist, I'll grant you that. But since then, in the past 13 years, he had done two public health degrees at Harvard University in America. That's no bad.
Aye.
But then I even go to extremes with you. I say, you know what? What if he only was a dentist?
Aye.
It's not the worst profession for a guy to get involved in the medical world at a time of a pandemic when he's wanting to help out. He's a dentist.
Well,
if you'd have said, he's a rent boy,
aye.
I might have said, I fear booze. I mean, what were we thinking? This guy's a rent boy.
Aye.
We need him a job like that. But no, he was a dentist. And then he had 13 years swatting at Harvard University to do these two public, you know. So it was an absolute nonsense. He, by his own admission, nobody was an expert in a global pandemic because nobody had experience, unless you go back to the Spanish flu, I think it was in the 1910s. Unless you were old enough to remember that, which means nobody was an expert because they'd never dealt with this before. But the information that he had at hand, the information that he was working with via the rest of the experts, and even taking that down to the guys that he bowed to, even your Chris Whitties down in London, who, you know, you rarely heard a criticism of that guy. You'd heard plenty for Boris Johnson and his cohorts, right? But Chris Whitty, great, and Professor Leach, always saluted him. But, you know, he was working on the science. He's a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
He was working on the science, and he was brilliant with our listeners. I honestly, he was absolutely brilliant, and I would never hear a word against him.
Aye. Fair dues. I wanted to ask you about the restaurant critic side of it as well.
Right.
She also done
restaurant
that
reviewer.
Restaurant reviewer.
I was never a restaurant critic or a food critic. Always said to do that critic. Such a harsh word. And MD would have said, again, we go back to critics, your detractors and all that. MD would have said, what does he know about food? So I think if you were a food critic, you would have liked to be the guy that might have had some experience in the industry and all the rest of it, you know. Restaurant reviewer, because my remit was to go into the restaurants as Joe Blogs, which you'll find 99.9% of people that go into restaurants are Joe Blogs. They go in there and they're hoping to get a nice meal and nice surroundings, get some decent grub, no pay over the top for it, and leave there thinking that was a nice night.
Aye.
And when I started doing it for The Record, when I joined The Record in 1998, after my 8 years at the Evening Times, I was in there to write a couple of columns a week, but my then editor, just by coincidence, we were launching a magazine my first day I was in the paper on a Saturday in September 98, and he said, right, we've got this magazine coming up. He says, I want to add into your contract doing something for the magazine. So being a firm believer and trying to stick to what you know, or at least what you think you know about, I said, right, I'll do it if it's something I'm interested in. And he said, right, you don't just met me. What are your interests? And I said, well, I don't know if you've got anything about that, but I said, but I've got a 1998 Footloose and Fancy Free, living in my mom, if I'm being honest, and great active social life, right? No restraints, right? And I says, I've got a really active social life. And he went, right. He says, I want to do a restaurant review in here, but I don't want it to be all arty-farty and all fancy. And like maybe, dare I say it, some of the Sunday broadsheets, half the page is about where the artichokes were sourced from and, you know, all that stuff, you know. So I just want it written as a punter, as guys, women that get into restaurants, you know. I says, oh, come here, man. So I did it, and within a couple of weeks, it was weird, it really, really took off. And within a couple of weeks, out in the street and all that, normally you get folk, aye, Tom Hullowell are shite, and aye, he's got fucked last week. It was all about football when you were out and about, you know. How do you hate Rangers? No, I don't. Rangers are in a tough time at now, so a few jokes about, how do you hate Celtic? Oh, no, Celtic are right, fair enough, right? And I never ever shied away from that, even in this day. I never shy away, let's say, for a pub. I live in Glasgow. I never shy away for a pub that is deemed a Celtic shop or a Rangers shop. I'll go anywhere for a drink, anywhere to watch a football night. And I would like to think out there's a lot of folk that would back me on this, guys that I've met in my travels. They'd maybe agree with me. If I meet a guy at the bar and all that, and he might have a blether, a bit of fire blether away, and get the boy a pint and all that, you know. I've got good antenna if there's a tiny 0.1% aimed at Hank's, try to be a wee bit nasty and looking looking for a bit of bother, hoping maybe I'll take the bait
and react,
and you know, and I'm clever to that, right? But by and large, even boys that come up and they're your sworn enemy in the pub to start with, once you maybe open their eyes to a wee couple of things and explain a couple, and then they're your best pal, you know. So I'll never shy away from going out and about in Glasgow, right? And whether it's taxi drivers, guys in the pub, whoever it might be, they're always worth a story as well. And I've always got, if it was in my notebook with my pen, you've always got the notes on your phone, and you've always got a column to write or a show to do, so you never let any of that stuff go to waste. Stories that you wouldn't get if you maybe watched the game that night in the house, solitary, right, you're much better being hooting about, right? But in that same vein, which I was saying about, 2 or 3 weeks into doing the restaurant reviews, wow, there was this great change in my folk in the street and the pubs. Like, where are you eating this week, Tom? Where are you? Right, I'm going out with a bird tomorrow night. Where do you recommend? And I'm, right, is it Italian? Is it, would you like Chinese? You know? So the restaurant thing really, really took off, and it was great. I mean, I did it in total for about 22 years, including the 6 years that I had a wee period at the Scottish Sun. And when I joined him, what I call my wee Mo Johnston move, for the record, to the Scottish Sun, strictly for the money. They made me an unbelievable offer that I'd be embarrassed to tell any of my pals in the papers, but it must have been the last big move.
Right.
Sadly, print newspapers are having a torrid time, and it's, hey, it's no fault. Aye, that's because she's right or shite. It's technology.
Aye.
It's like I'm saying, fault. Open their phone now if they want to read the Daily Telegraph.
Aye.
You know, it's very, very unfair to say, it's your fault. It's, you know, Keith Jackson, Bill Leckie, it's, you know, it's nothing to do with him, right? But when the doing a restaurant reviews, papers were through the roof at that period, for me starting in 98. The internet was in its absolute infancy. So it went absolutely mega. And for the 22 years that I did it in total, because when I went back then to the record, just at the, almost at the start of COVID, they contacted me. I had a wee hiatus, the only time I'd been out of newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
When I finished up with the Scottish Sun, and again, what I'm saying about papers, that was costs.
Aye.
As much, well, there you go, I'm back, not main story. When they took me in there on a right, right good deal, you know, I knocked hell out of it for 6 years, but when it came to pounds, shillings and pence, and they're looking, they're saying, oh, wait a minute.
Aye.
It's a wee bit, I was a wee bit of luxury that they perhaps couldn't afford.
Aye.
And when it got to them wanting me to maybe take silly money for the same job, you know, maybe a wee parting of the ways. But, you know, I was quite happy in that, because I'd be, you know, I'd been, including going back to the old telly show and then doing gigs and corporate things and the two-hour radio shows every week. I was doing a hell of a lot. And by this time, I had a young daughter and all that, you know. So when the record came back in for me, they were wanting me to do a, it was like a COVID chronicles thing.
Right.
Just keeping it light. Everybody was starting to get a wee bit, it was like banging their head against a brick wall with COVID. Everybody was getting a bit, naturally, folks, mental health complaints went through the roof and all that. It was a horrible thing. So they were wanting to keep it a wee bit light elsewhere, the wee funny things that had happened with COVID. So I went back in, one of my old bosses had phoned me for the record. I was enjoying having a wee break, I must be honest. My wife knew I would enjoy having a wee break for the papers, but it's just one of the things that's in your blood. If you've been a motor mechanic, you know, and you walk by a guy that was fixing his car, I bet you wouldn't be able to help yourself, saying, can I have a wee look, mate? Can I help you? So there was a wee bit of like that with me. So I went back to the record, but I thought, there was no question anyhow, but I wasn't going to say, I'll go back and I'll do restaurant reviews. I just thought, not all day, the two-page spread that I still do on a Saturday, I says, that'll do me. That's great. I'll enjoy doing that. I enjoy the writing. Takes me back to how I started out, if you like. But that is enough. But for the 22 years that I did the restaurants, wow, I still need to pinch myself, because to get paid to go out and fill your face in a different restaurant every week, right around Scotland, and I put the miles in. There are some restaurant reviewers who I could accuse of maybe staying to their home patch and all that. But I was writing for a national newspaper. That was very unfair. Just Glasgow, 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 or through to Edinburgh. I'd be everywhere. I'd be up, you know, Laird, Gowie, up between Inverness and Dingwall. I'd been to Skye, I'd been down the borders. I'd been absolutely everywhere.
It's a bit like the Rangers Celtic thing, though. You want a wide. You don't want to just focus on the one place.
Absolutely. So I went everywhere. I always say it, whoever came with me, invariably one of my mates who took a wee skive off work, or maybe took a day off or whatever, and I would normally meet one of my pals, because I did it at a time I didn't drive. I've been driving now for 12 years, which isn't long. So latterly with the reviews, I would mere off no jump the motor and go to the place, right? But I would meet maybe with one of my mates ordinarily at Central Station in Glasgow, if we were maybe going to go down south, Ayrshire or whatever, right? Or I'd meet Queen Street Station, we'd look at the board and say, oh, Perth, Dundee, Montrose, Forth or Aberdeen, we'll pick one of them. And for my mate, whoever came, it was a great day out for, because for the minute he sat in the train, the wee drinks trolley went by. I think a small gin and tonic was required here. Then you've got half the train, let's say, in Montrose, always a taxi rank at the train station. Jump in the taxi, how you doing, mate? Thankfully, by that point, been on the radio for a few years, I keep forgetting a lot of folk know your voice. So even in the back of the taxi, going, oh, Tom, it's yourself. That's great. Because I'd say, I'm up to do a review for the paper. Where do you recommend? Taxi drivers have always got an opinion. They always know the restaurants in their town. And the boy would take us there. Fucking welly in with the meal, nice wee bottle of wine, don't mind if I do. Scribble down all my notes, then put them away, pay for the meal. That was always hang folk used to always ask, I bet you get in there and you get free food. You didn't get free. Yes, ultimately I did, once you had filed your expenses to the paper. It was my job every month.
You're still paying
articles.
The restaurant.
But it wasn't ever a review unless I paid. And what I mean by that is, until I'd paid and got my receipt and folded it away with my notes, and that's my job done. And until I had done that, and I was very, very strenuous about this, there would be somebody had come out, you know, they couldn't recognise me or something, right? Well, I think that's Tam Cowan, I think he's doing a review. And you come out, no charge to it. I'd say, I need to get the charge or else I've not done my job. I can't review it. The minute he said, I can't review it, because they want the coverage. Right, I kind of, okay, and they'd give you the bill, right? And that was great, because it wasn't coming out of my pocket anyhow. And then once a month, you would sit down, fill out your eckies, send them into paper, and that was that. But there was no shortage of pals who were wanting to come with me, because you see it from their perspective. They get the wee day trip, they get the train travel, of course, I would pick up the train tickets, they would get the free feed, they would get the wine. And then they didn't have to write a 1,200 word article.
You had to stop the road.
Aye, it was absolutely brilliant. So, there was no shortage of pals in that time. So, but that was a great. And you know what? I still kinda, in fact, almost a wee exclusive for you. I'm in the throes of starting a kind of a restaurant review podcast.
Nice.
That now has been, because I did it for so long, and because a lot of folks still associate me with it. And I do quite a bit of stuff even online, Instagram. You get a lot of folk now, and I'm happy to date for them. I don't want anything, but you get loads of folks. I've just started out damn business. Is there any chance you could come along, take some photos, and that gives a wee bit of coverage? Now, hands up, if I'm then going to go along, I did a place I went to recently. This guy begging me in Edinburgh, any chance come along? Then I was going to take a wee three course off him. Didn't it cost him? Cost him washers, right? But I can't be a mug about it, right? I've got a family, I've got work. I'm not going to get through there and be out of pocket. That would be, you need your head examined. So I've done quite a lot of that online, and I've got a list of places that I keep in a note on my phone, places that have invited me, bring your family, bring your pals, you know, just trying to get a wee bit of coverage going. And thankfully, because I've got a big following on that, that then has been helpful to folk, but I still do a wee bit of that there, but there's been wee nibbles since I finished doing it in the newspapers about doing a food pod. I did a short lived one in here for 6 weeks called Scoff the Ball, and it was me, and it was mainly me talking to kind of like suppliers of food, like one of these great maybe beef suppliers, or a guy at the through in the East Coast that made all their own cured meats and all that, and all their salamis, pastramis, and they end up selling out to hotels and restaurants and that. I spoke to the wee guy, John Gall at Browning's, the bakery, who are famous for the Killy pies. It was talking to folk like that. But the only thing was, particularly when I spoke to the owner of the Anstruther Fish Bar, the famous fish and chip shop up there in Fife, it was COVID as well. We made these in. And I couldn't go up to the chip shop and see everything and chat to him while he's putting a big fish into the hot fat of it. So it was done with me. He'd phones on in a studio, him up on the phone in the shop. The Wi-Fi was rotten.
It was not the full experience.
No, it wasn't a full experience, but they were fairly well received. Folk that listened to them seemed to like them. And as a result of that, when other folk have said about doing a kind of food podcast, and again, I would date totally for the Joe Bloggs perspective. And I'd be quite keen in doing it. So in terms of doing something, I don't know how I'm going to get the bloody time, to be honest with you, but I'm really, really busy now. Thankfully, I'm no moaning. And unlike my pals that I spent the day with yesterday, air races at my mate's birthday, I could see the relief in their faces getting a day off work, because they were doing some of them, just their jobs are just shite. They're maybe sitting at a desk or whatever, you know. So I love having it a day. I'm blessed in that respect. I absolutely enjoy having it a day. But so I'd never complain about workload or that. And I, if I could squeeze in a wee afternoon somewhere doing a wee foodie podcast, because it's only out of the various strands of media, as much as I've done. And particularly, you know yourself, it would be like during COVID. I must have done in the old Zoom. I think I never thought has been a once upon a time a wee bit of a technophobe, but how something like Zoom suddenly became the norm. And you know, there'd be guys saying that, so I never refuse a request to do a podcast, because when I was saying to you, like, and in fact I did say it earlier, when I had a mentor, a guy like Philip Differ, who was instrumental in me sitting here the now, but in the BBC, I had a lot of great guys as well starting my newspaper career who were brilliant with me. And as a result of that, you feel now it's your duty at 54, I'll be 55 in April. 55, or as the Celtic fans call it, one. But we'll not go there. But I will be 55. So I've done 100 of these, and it's young guys, whatever, who contacted me, loads of them through COVID, as you'll recall. Damn, I've set up a wee podcast. Can I? And I said, aye, absolutely. I'll say that a Tuesday night or a Thursday night's good. I'll be at my desk. Couldn't go anywhere. Aye. And I would have poured myself a glass of wine, sat down in my wee office in the house, and got the Zoom on, and away they went. And that was that. So I think it's a wee bit of your duty to do that. It's not quite the, you know, the looking for the MBE or anything like that, and Bob Geldof trying to ease famine in Africa. But a lot of folk helped me out when I was starting, and you seem to forget that for young guys, I'll be deemed as an old guy now myself, and an old fart, and was it that guy again? He's been on the radio for years and all that. So, aye, it's just you want to give something back, you know.
100%. See from your point of view, obviously, and I'm not putting you to pasture yet. What's been the best time of your career from your point of view? What bit have you enjoyed, like, the most?
Well, you know what? Everybody asks you that, what you prefer, and the different things I've done, I love them all for their own particular reason. Now, the radio, what I love about the radio, and there you go, I keep seeming to back myself up here. When I told you about the time you were asked to stay on air for another hour, great, you can do that in the radio. Right? I keep the mic switched on, that's that. You can do a radio show. If I slept in, and I'm only 10 minutes up the road for you, right? If I slept in, I know for a fact I could still go through these swing doors that are next to us, got into the studio with my pyjamas on, with minutes left to spare, but I could still put out a radio show. So that's a great thing about radio. It's lively, it's live, it's happening now. There's been a lot of things while we've been on air. I'll give you a good example. It was while we were on air and Craig Levine was our guest, because I'll never forget this show. It was announced that Sean Connery had died, one of the Scottish icons. Now, that was announced in within the first, I think, half hour. Yeah, 2 hour show. That show just went like that after that. Everybody then, Sean Connery, tributes, best bond, all the rest of it, you know, it was absolutely amazing. And that's the joy of live radio. The joy of, if you like, my first love, the written word, is that I've never worked in a newspaper office, whether it was Evening Times, Daily Record, Scottish Sun, or Daily Record again. I sit in my office, I have classic FM on, because I can't listen to, I love my music and I've got very wide taste, but I can't listen to any of the lyrics when I'm thinking of words myself, right? So classical music, I think what got me into that years ago. Love classical music, love going to classical concerts and all that. So, but I love almost the, it's almost quite therapeutic, the solitude almost of sitting there myself, my keyboard, my screen, and being able to just correct that and, you know, make that a comma rather than a semicolon. I just like all that. There's something about it I like, right? And then seeing the finished, as much as some folk will say, well, it seems a bit dated now, but writing something one day and then seeing it in hard copy the next, which must be the great feeling a newly published author would get to see their work in print
on a shelf
for the
somewhere.
First time, you know? So I love that as well. And then for all the years when we did Offside, the old telly show, for 10 years, wow, 10 years on the telly on a Monday night, then that was great. I can't lie, because the money, because it was telly, was superb. It was great dough, and getting paid that great money every week. It wasn't like we're with the radio, you're on every single week. We were done with the 20 weeks a year. The Offside, we'd do a run of 10, maybe for the February, March through to the end of the season, so you could catch a lot of that drama.
Yep.
And then we'd maybe do the 10 weeks preceding Christmas, working your way back. And we did that for 10 years. And that was great, because you were always, which I loved then, even up to now, live gigs and all that. You were in front of a live audience.
Aye.
When we do the radio, it's me and Stuart and a guest, and no other folk you see are through the screen, producer, sound engineer, then the buttons. So the live audience aspect of the telly was great. And again, with that immediacy, what I liked about that, we did every show on a Monday as live. We started the recording around about 7:30, 7:45, and it had to go at 10:35 at night. So there was no time to fuck about. We didn't have editors pouring over them and tweaking. We only ever stopped if there was a problem with a camera or a light bulb popped or something like that, or somebody took unwell. Only happened once in the audience. That was the only reason we'd ever have stopped a recording. So there was that immediacy in it as well. And again, having been trained on that with the newspaper and the radio, before I went into day every show, starting the recording at 7:45, a must would have been to watch all the tea time news bulletins.
Aye.
And a very off chance, something popped up.
Something's happened.
Something mad that Ali McCoist had done. That if we could get a wee joke in about that, and folk at home had watched that in the news earlier that night, think, fuck, good on them. That was to get a wee joke about that. And, you know, so that was always a big thing. But yeah, so I've genuinely loved doing the telly. Money was great. Love doing the radio for the immediacy of it, and sitting in the studio and inventing stuff. Never having a script, never having to stick to what you thought you were going to be talking about, you know. Love doing the writing newspaper, because it's in my blood, and I'm still a newspaperaholic. I'm one of the last guys in Scotland that gets the pile of them delivered to my front door every day. And then love, as I'll be doing later on tonight, live stuff, me, a mic, an audience, no censors, no BBC rulebook up to a certain extent. And I love doing that as well, because there's nothing like the sound of laughter for a live audience. I keep trying to tell that to Susan Calman. I says, you've no idea what you're missing. It's tremendous. Other Scottish comedians are available for that joke. But so I've been very, very lucky in what I do. I love what I do. And the only thing that I would say, for even for folk that want to, everyday life wants to have a wee go at, you know, you know. And I'm blessed that we've got a great audience for off, a brilliant audience for off the ball. So they must like something that I'm doing. We always had great viewing. That's how we lasted 10 years, for Christ's sake, on the telly. And that's how I've got away with it for 35 years in newspapers, you know. So somebody out there must like us. But, you know, it's for the I just feel blessed at what I do, and I would love to do it as long as I possibly can, you know. And my barometer for that, the good thing is with me and Stuart will be, where are we now, Stuart will be 72 this year.
Jeez.
Right, no, exactly. That always surprises folk when I tell them that, and sure likes cutting about in the hoodies and all that.
He's looking good for it.
The 300-pound trainers and everything, you know. So he's still a dude, right? But Stuart at 72 does a radio with his eyes shut, you know, actually. Literally, sometimes I've got to, Stuart,
give me a nudge.
Aye, leave it visitors. But no, so you know, so I've got nae. I mean, there's all these milestones you got. Yeah, right. 30 years this year, you're off the ball. You know, oh, that sounds like a good time for maybe stepping. You think, I'm 55, right. And in my head, there's a lot of, certainly me and my partner. I wish I felt 55 in my head. Stupid young boy, daft young boy at times, you know. So there's no question of me thinking, I could just chuck that. Aye. And enjoy it too much. Mm-hmm. Going back to some of my pals yesterday, they can't wait. All the boys that was with yesterday, they're largely about 3 or 4 years older than me, can't wait till they're able to walk away.
Retire.
For the drudgery.
Aye.
Of the day job. But how dare I say that about end of our day? It would be embarrassing. I always say that in all the years that we've done the radio, if I, as my want, I've been very lucky as well, unlike Stuart with Perth and the location of where the BBC is, I can get to every single Motherwell home game. If it's a 3 o'clock kickoff, I know the games are here, there and everywhere. Aye. But if Motherwell are at 3 o'clock at Fir Park, or indeed, you know, Ibrox, Parkhead, St Mirren, even down to Kilmarnock, that M77's a breeze, then I can go and see my team. And it helps now that, trickier when we're doing the lunchtime and the evening show, and then I think because when they started showing games at 5:30, that's how they first moved us to a Sunday.
Right.
Suits me right down to the ground. The Sunday show's got a different feel to it. We love doing the Sunday shows because we never know. We finish a Saturday show and we don't know what we're going to talk about coming in on a Sunday, because anything could happen with football overnight. We, more often than not now, we come on a Sunday, maybe after a game or just before a big game, and we never know what's going to be in the Sunday paper. So we love doing the Sunday show. You can't wait to get in. But with the Motherwell games then, I'm able to get games at Fir Park, for example. I have my season ticket for, God, 45 years, and I got my first one, my 10th birthday. So nice. I'll be 45 years this year, Christ. But I'll go in Fir Park. I can leave here, get out the car park, hope that the traffic's all right, get out of Motherwell. And I can be in my seat in the main stand where there's about 7 or 8 of us all sat together, have done so for years, for about 10 to 3. Not once, to sum up about what I do for a living, not once when I've finished the show and gone out again have I edged into my seat and said to my pals, oh, I've just come from my work. Because they would say, come here, you fucking booting the boys and all that. You know what I mean? When they have put in a graft. Aye. All week at some fucking thing that would give me the fear, a real job, you know what I mean? So I never, that is my work, that is how I earn my living, all these things, but I would never hammer home the fact, compared to boys out digging the roads or nurses in the NHS, I would never overdo the work.
Aye. Hard day.
Aspect. Aye.
One last question for you.
Right, brilliant.
And it's not about Motherwell.
Right.
Obviously, from a journalist point of view, it is changing now. It's more of a digital world. But for people just coming into it, what would you say from an advice point of view based on your career?
I would say take advice for people who have been there and done it. Try to, if possible, and this is probably even more relevant now with the internet age, the online journalism rather than print journalism, if there's something that you're into, if you've got a particular wee, you know, a particular wee interest in something, for black and white films to, you know, badminton, you know, have a wee go at that. There's always an audience out there for people, and you can sometimes find a wee niche, you know. And because basically anything that is online now is deemed published. You know, your work has been published if it's been put up online. Now, whereas back in the day, the classic, and I did that as well, it'd have been the summer job with your local paper. Mm-hmm. And I did that with the Motherwell Times when I was about to leave school, did the summer, and you were putting captions onto wedding photos, or you were joy of joys because they knew I was a Motherwell fan. I get sent up to an Arbroath Motherwell pre-season friendly, and wow, what a big deal that was. I was the match reporter for the Motherwell Times, and it was great. But when I still remember that day fondly, when I think of the interest that gave me, and that was because I was interested in the football, mm-hmm. and they knew that.
Aye.
And I get the wee chance of doing that. So, you know, there are still, you know, because all the stuff, as much as, you know, print sales are not what they were, they're trying their best, and it's not the same as picking up a paper, aye. But they're trying their best to get all the newspaper stuff online. Mm-hmm. And it annoys folk with pop-ups and all right. that shite. You don't get that when you're sitting reading your paper, mm-hmm. right? But they're trying to get all this content online. So there are still editors, content editors, out there looking for stuff. Mm-hmm. So I would say that would be my advice. If there's a wee something that you're into, you know. And, you know, another example I'll give you, Alan Burrows, who's now the chief executive at Aberdeen, what a rise he has. If you work back the way with him, chief executive at Aberdeen, chief executive at Motherwell, on I'd guess a third of the money he was on now. Mm-hmm. Before that, he was head of media at Motherwell, dealing with all the press and all the journalists. Before that, he was one of the main guys on a Motherwell message board, Steelmen Online. Right. He was one of the, what is it they call it, a moderator.
Right, okay.
Right? And just because when Motherwell were trying to come out of the dark ages, mm-hmm. and try to have some kind of social kind of network, kind of presence, then, oh, who's the guy that does mm-hmm. the stuff for the fans? And they brought him in. Before you know it, then he was going in the pre-season training trips with the team, and he was putting stuff online,
right.
And then that became him getting the job in charge of the media,
right.
And then when Leanne Dempster left, mm-hmm. he got the job as first general manager, then effectively chief executive. Then he was so good at that job, he got, and I'd say that as a Motherwell fan, he got the promotion, going to a big club like Aberdeen. So in a strange sort of way, what I was explaining to you about my career, mm-hmm. his kind of mirrors mine as mm-hmm. well. I don't know what Alan had been up to now. I don't even know what he did, what he was planning to do. I don't know how he earned a living when he was only doing the message board stuff and mm-hmm. all that. I've no idea what he was into. I just always see him as the Motherwell guy. But again, there was that interest that he had, and he certainly cashed in on it.
That's amazing. Tom, it's been a pleasure.
No worries.
Absolute pleasure.
You're absolutely
appreciate
welcome.
It. Thank
I hope
you
that
so
wasn't
much.
Too long.
No, brilliant. Spot on.